Bore da, croeso I Abertawe. Welcome to Swansea. It is the Twilight Show with me, Nathan Ginn, and we are here on Teachers Talk Radio. A few technical issues just before to get us started, but we are back talking about teachers and family. So we are ready to go. See you on the other side. Hello everyone. Croeso I Abertawe. Welcome to Swansea. And my hin hoilog. It is sunny here at the moment. I've been down to the beach for an ice cream today. I can't hear any. Oh, sorry. Just a message is popping in there. I think just a little bit of intermittent things. Didn't hear the jingle. Okay, well, what we'll do is we'll carry on. I think I will load up our adverts so that I can play them to you and we'll test them out as we go and our news. But we should have my sister Sophie there entering the live studio. Sophie, can you try and call in for us and we'll be able to start talking about all things teachers and family. There we go. Sophie is joining. I've just sent an invite to you there, Sophie. So it should pop you through on the call. Sophie, it says you're connected. So if you want to start talking when you hear us come through.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, Sophie. Good. A little bit of a fun start to the show there, but thank you for persevering with us. So, Sophie, this evening we're going to be talking all things family and teachers. Now, you're my sister, obviously, so there's a connection, family and teachers. But also, as I've sort of been saying in some of the run-up to this show, both of our parents are teachers.
Yep.
Yeah, both my parents are teachers. So I went to a school where Dad taught at, our dad taught at, yeah?
Yep.
And you taught at a school alongside our dad as well.
I did.
Okay, so we've got a lot of different aspects that we're going to talk through as we go, okay? As I say, there's been a lot of conversations going on Twitter this week about some of the aspects that I wanted to talk about this week on the show. So some of the things that we wanted to talk about, I think, you know, I want to talk about being from a family of teachers. You know, I think that's come up a lot. I don't know if you know of many people who are their parents were teachers. Is that something you've come across?
I've got some staff at school whose parents are teachers, and I've got some staff at school where there's the mum and the son both teach at my school as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So that seems to be a common one because, yeah, we'll get onto that because I've got some people I know as well who are in a similar situation. Another one, which was a really big topic, was about being a parent and a teacher and the kind of different interactions there about whether it gives you a different viewpoint, whether it, you know, there are a lot of myths, I think, about that. Now, I have children. You don't. You're an auntie, though, to my children. It doesn't need explaining how that works. But we'll talk about the kind of different sides with that. As I say, working with your family, I wanted for us to talk about, and also being taught by your family, because I certainly at my most recent schools, certainly teaching assistants, it seems to be more common with. But obviously, myself, I was at a school where our dad was a teacher as well. Yeah. So, Sophie, I think what's probably easiest is if you give us a little bit of an explanation of sort of who you are, what you do professionally, before we get into some of these other elements. So, Sophie, welcome to the show. Croeso. Tell us about yourself.
So I am primarily a geography teacher. I trained as a geography teacher. My first job, as you've mentioned, was in the same school as Dad. That was a middle school. So I was a middle school teacher for a good 7 years, I think. So that's year 5, 6, 7 and 8. And we had them in Suffolk. They closed down in 2012 and I had to get a job somewhere else. Luckily enough, I got a job at the secondary school, which also went through the changes because that then took our year 7s and 8s. I have been, whilst I've been there, I've been a geography teacher, head of geography, head of year, and I'm now assistant principal and head of year. I mean, it's a small secondary school, so we do a lot of jobs. I'm head of year 11, I'm a head of house, and I'm assistant principal in charge of various different things in school. So a bit of a journey, but
you know, obviously, as far as family competitiveness, being, you know, I'm a deputy head, aren't I?
Yeah. yes, you are a deputy head.
Until recently, yeah.
In a primary school.
Oh, okay. And I see that obviously, you know.
No, not at all. I'm joking.
Looking down slightly on the fact, it is very interesting that we call them, you know, similar things. It's a similar ranking. But obviously, I only had maybe 200 children in the whole school, whereas your school, even though it's a small secondary, you have...
Well, I have 300 children in just my house, the house that I'm in charge of. So we have 800 odd kids at school.
Okay, so I can't boast too much.
That's all right. It's the responsibility it's the responsibilities, isn't it? It's not all about the numbers of students and stuff.
No, certainly. Yeah, I agree. But as far as boasting at sort of Christmas meals and things,
I win.
Oh, okay, well, you know, we will see. You're doing well with the accent as well this evening. So if I see that you're it is worth noting to any of our listeners that our mother has already primed Sophie that she needs to talk correctly when she is on the on tonight. But of course, so we are from a family of teachers. Okay, so if we start off with that aspect of it, so to give some context, both of our parents are teachers. Both of our parents trained as PE teachers. You can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, by the way, Sophie.
Yeah, they met at university training as teachers, didn't they, as PE teachers?
Okay, so we are from a family of PE teachers. Weirdly, every of the children in our family, we all went on to be geography graduates.
Yep.
I think a lot of that was down to maybe some of our upbringing. We'll talk about the benefits of having teachers as parents, I guess, in a moment. But, you know, this idea of teachers creating more teachers, I don't want to make it sound like sort of gremlins or something, but I can certainly think of at my most recent school, the head teacher. Both of him and his wife were both head teachers, and their daughter was training to become a teacher. I can certainly think at my school before that, Arsenko, her daughter was a teacher or trained to be a teacher and came to work at our school. And also one of the other teachers who came to work with us, both of her parents were head teachers at local schools. And she was a teacher and came to work with us. Is that something that you've noticed, that, you know, the children of teachers sometimes become teachers? Or do you think that's kind of a false kind of thing that I'm seeing that isn't really there?
No, I would agree. I mean, yes, there are. I've got a few members of staff who work in schools, and then their children work in schools, whether that's teaching or being a TA or a member of support staff. And I don't know whether that's to do with the fact that they've seen that it's a good job to be in, or as it's perceived in the media, just that we get good holidays. I'm not sure if mum and dad being a teacher is the reason why I'm a teacher. I was thinking about this today, and I'm not sure whether that is the reason why I am a teacher, is because mum and dad were.
Okay, well, I'm going to press you on that a little bit, Sophie, because, you know, one of my bugbears is when people give these kind of false answers of why they became a teacher, or maybe not false answers, but, you know, they kind of, you upsell it at interview. Okay, so you don't think that mum and dad being teachers made you want to be a teacher? Why did you become a teacher then?
Well, you and I had this discussion when I was down with you the other week, and I've thought about it since. And I was thinking about it today because I thought you were probably going to ask me why did I become a teacher? And I think I've been teaching now for 15 years, and I'm not sure what enticed me to be a teacher in the first place. I did a geography degree. I loved geography, but I'm not sure if it was my love of geography and wanting to be able to explain geography to students, if that was the reason I wanted to be a teacher. I'm not sure if perhaps it was mum and dad, the experiences that we got, because mum and dad were teachers, and seeing how mum and dad enjoyed their jobs, whether that was part of it or whether it's all just what, you know, all of it together made me think, oh, actually, this looks like a job that I could do. I tested it out first. So I was a teaching assistant for a year to see if I liked the idea of working in a school before becoming a teacher. But I'm really not sure. I think if I got asked in an interview now, why did you want to be a teacher? I'm really not sure how I would answer that.
Well, one of the things that really interests me about it, and this kind of, I don't know, hereditary trait of teaching or whatever we want to call it, or a myth of it maybe, is one of our other hosts, is going to be talking tomorrow, I think, or later this week, about the X factor of what makes a good teacher. And I know that people often will say, oh, you know, when I always knew they'd be a teacher because I saw them bossing people around at home, or I saw them trying to lead things. Now, if there is a characteristic, there's HB History saying that he's going to be, if there is a characteristic, a character trait that parents are passing on, do you feel that mum and dad, or our mum and dad, I should say, we keep referring to them to mum and dad because as if we're talking to each other. Do you think that our parents encouraged us to become teachers, that they put a personality trait there, that it was a nurture thing or a nature thing?
I'm not sure. What do you think? I'll put it back on to you. What do you think?
Apart from the holidays and apart from some of the experiences, and maybe we'll talk about the experiences, the positives of growing up in a family of teachers, and particularly PE teachers, I might add, that is worth noting. I don't necessarily think of our parents as teachers in that sense. Like, I'm sure that because we're both talking about this, that our mum will be listening, but I don't necessarily think that she is the best at explaining stuff in her personal life to me. Like, when she wants me to do something, she certainly, and maybe we'll get onto that as well, because...
I think that when you go into a classroom, so I think how I am, I don't know, with you and with mum and dad and with your boys and, you know, and everyone else in the family is not how I am when I go into the classroom. I put my, you know, I turn into an actress and you know, put on, not a show, but I am not the same. I'm not completely different, but I'm not the same person I am at home than I am when I'm in the classroom. So perhaps
maybe that's it. Maybe there is the perception around this. And we are, you know, we're going to talk about sort of parents as teachers and teachers as parents a little bit later on. It'd be interesting to see your perception of that, because I am certainly not like I am as a teacher with my own children.
Think you are sometimes.
You think I am? Well, maybe I turn on my teacher voice, or I forget to turn it off. All right, well, but we get sidetracked by our other thing. So, you know, still talking about parents as teachers. Krishna's just messaging this, and my mum was a teacher. Once at a social event, my little brother then told someone he doesn't have a mum, his teacher is his mum. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think you do get some of these comments coming out from the little ones, especially when they're talking about what parents do. And I can't remember, you know, if I ever really explained it as a child that my parents were teachers, if I ever said that to a teacher at school. Certainly, I remember growing up that my teachers at secondary knew that my parents were teachers. Yeah. You know, I remember that certainly, but I think that's being in a smaller network that you do know other teachers. All right, well, let's talk about the benefits, and hopefully, so we're talking about growing up with two parents who are teachers, which means every half term, every summer, holidays, whole family, yeah? Everyone off, not, you know, some people might be where one person is a teacher and, you know, you might have that, but with two people who are teachers. And I know there was a message on our Twitter from Seb, one of our other hosts, who said that both of his parents were teachers as well. Suddenly you get the whole family are released for 6 weeks over summer. Yeah. Certainly I remember that being a positive of a childhood experience, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah, and I think that's where our love of geography came from, actually, because when it did come to the summer holidays, mum and dad just wanted to get us away. So we had a VW camper and we just used to drive, you know, to France or, you know, up somewhere like Peak District or the Lake District where we could go walking, and dad used to explain things to us and make us do, and mum used to make us do adventurous things. And yeah, I think those holidays are great memories for us. And I think that is where our enjoyment of geography and our knowledge of geography started, I think. So that, you know, was the bonus for us.
And we've got Roger's history there saying, same for me, both parents teachers. So maybe, you know, maybe that's another aspect of this. Maybe teachers attract teachers as well. Or you know, maybe the job is all consuming in that sense. I don't know. So, yeah, we talked a little bit there about the holidays and the summer and the going away. It's also worth noting that as sort of adventurous teachers, should it say, or PE teachers, or certainly involved in outdoor ed, they were running Duke of Edinburgh.
Yep.
So I certainly remember almost every half term or break, we were away camping somewhere with a group of normally 15 and 16 year olds in a bunch of tents nearby doing an expedition. But we were certainly away a lot. And I remember from that, you know, I had a map of the Peak District, I think, on my bedroom wall as a child because we were there that much.
Yep.
Definitely. You know.
Yeah, and the ski trips. I think we were pretty lucky that mum ran ski trips as well, and we were able to go on. I mean, you definitely, you went on loads, but we were able to tag along on some of those as well. So we were lucky with that experience as well.
Yeah, well, possibly that's where my experience might be slightly different. It's okay to say, Sophie, by the way, that I was a little bit of a naughty child. you can bring that in, because certainly I remember inset days, and maybe you have a different memory of this, but I certainly remember there being inset days where I was put sorting basketballs and inflating balls and PE mats at mum's school, but I seem to remember only I was there.
Yeah, I think I was lucky. I think me and our cousin Zoe got to go around Nana and Grandad's quite a bit of those, and you had to go into school.
Yeah, so certainly I remember, and I explained this to someone recently, when I went to visit the new school that I'm starting at, I went into the sports hall and there was that smell of a sport hall. And I said, oh, this reminds me of my childhood. I remember, you know, this PE equipment smell that I remember being sort of tucked away in a cupboard as a PE teacher. I certainly also remember, as you say, going on a lot of ski trips. Yeah. And, you know, so I would, our mum would organise these ski trips, and then certainly I would often be taken along for whatever reason. I wasn't safe to be left at home with you and our brother, or trusted for anyone to look after, but certainly it meant that I got to go skiing a lot as well. So I had a love of adventurous activities, and so my route into teaching was maybe slightly different, because I went away then and worked for an outdoor pursuits company called PGL after doing a geography degree. Other outdoor pursuits companies are available. And doing outdoor pursuits instructing is what made me kind of get a taste for teaching. And then I worked as a teaching assistant, and then I kind of got into teaching through that route. So my route was slightly different, but again, very impacted by parents being a teacher.
Well, I was going to say, actually, not that different to dad's, though, is it? Because our dad also worked at PGL and did all the outdoor education stuff before he became a teacher. So although, you know, you probably didn't think about it at the time, you followed a very similar route to dad into teaching.
Yeah. Without discussion, it's probably worth noting as well, because he, you know, I knew little bits about it, but it wasn't sort of through a deliberate kind of family choice that, you know, you will do this. It was kind of almost an accidental passing on of a love of being outdoors, being in the Lake District, the Peak District, the Brecon Beacons, you know, those kind of places, and doing that kind of thing. And then, as you say, that ability to have 6 weeks over summer as a family traveling and doing things was, you know, certainly something that I enjoyed. Now, what we're going to do, Soph, is I'm going to try playing a little clip of an advert. Okay. So I'm going to keep you just so you can tell me if you can hear it. If it doesn't work, you can just say, I can't hear that, Nathan. If it does work, what I'm going to do is I'm going to mute your microphone. Oh, HB History saying we're all ears. So what I'm going to do, because I'm playing it off a slightly different way, so we'll see if we can hear this. Off we go.
resources. Exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.creativeresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using discount code TTRadio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. Introducing the Leadership Masterclass Series by Diana Osagie. Learn how to ditch your fears and develop your leadership confidence. How to deal with difficult colleagues. How to thrive when you lead in a challenging environment. And how to get colleagues to buy into your vision. Join Diana for her online Leadership Masterclasses starting on the 10th of July and running all the way through the summer. These sessions are the perfect way to prepare and refresh for the next academic year and beyond. Book your place at courageousleadership.co.uk/events now. The first 50 leaders to sign up get an additional free mini coaching session with Diana herself. Don't miss this. Courageous Leadership Masterclasses at courageousleadership.co.uk/events.
And Croeso I Abertawe, welcome back from our ad break there. And we are talking all things family teacher with myself and Nathan Ginn here on Teachers Talk Radio and my sister, Sophie Ginn. Sophie, you are back unmuted. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So very exciting today as well for us here at Teachers Talk Radio. We hit another milestone on our Twitter this week. I don't know if you saw that, Sophie.
I did. Was it 4,000?
No, 6,000. 6,000 listeners. We have now 6,000, sorry, not listeners, 6,000 followers on Twitter. Many more listeners and individual listeners to different shows and listening in. And of course, if you do miss a show, you can always listen to it back visiting us at ttradio.org/listenback. Or you can just go to the ttradio.org website where you can find out about the hosts, you can find out about what shows are up and coming. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on all of the social media platforms. We are there and you can join the conversation. Now, if you are in the studio, of course, feel free to call in or text in if you want to join the conversation. But as I say, we are talking about different aspects of being from a family of teachers or being in a family with teachers. So, Sophie, we started off the show a little bit there talking about what it's like to be from a family of teachers, about whether there was any input. One of the things I didn't ask you was, do you feel that we were ever put off from becoming teachers by our parents?
No, I don't think so. I think Mum and Dad were happy for us to do whatever we wanted to do. I don't ever remember, and I don't know whether this was just the era that mum and dad taught, you know, when they taught, because obviously they're both retired. Dad retired in 2011, I think, and mum in 2016. But I don't remember them moaning much about teaching. Not that you and I moan that much, but I think, I don't know. I do know that in the 15 years I've been teaching, it does feel like the workload is more now and that we're put upon more. But that could be the fact that I've, you know, got a different job than when I started. But I don't ever remember mum or dad bringing loads of work home or whinging about teaching or having issues. So no, I don't think they ever put us off or persuaded us to be teachers. I think it was just up to us, really.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't specifically, I mean, I'm sure mum would have loved it if I'd become a doctor or a lawyer, you know, I'm sure. But I don't remember them specifically sort of saying, you know, no, don't do that. It's not, you know, it's not a good career. It's not a good profession to get into, which kind of leads me on to my next question. Would you say that to a future generation? If one of my boys turned around and said they want to become a geography teacher, how would you feel about that?
I'd love it. I think it's a great profession to be in. I know that it, you know, at times it's testing and, you know, workload and what goes on with the government and all sorts. But when I'm in the classroom, when I'm doing that part of my job, I absolutely love it. And I love teaching. I love the school that I teach at. And I really enjoy it. And I just think if your children are going to be happy in the job that they're doing, then that's the important thing. So if the boys wanted to be teachers, then I'm all for it.
Okay, well, that transitions us well to talking about my boys, who I have, for the people listening in, I have two boys. I have a two-year-old and a four-year-old. Mm-hmm. The youngest is called Tommy and the oldest is called George. And I will say that George is very much a George. And Tommy is very much a Tommy. If you pictured what a Tommy, you know, you have a class coming in to teach you, that you're going to teach, and they say, yep, this one's called Tommy Gin. If you can picture what that child would be like, then certainly that's Tommy. So I've got these two boys, and I am a teacher. I socially or within the family, I am not the person who looks after the children at family events, right? That's not something that I've ever really done. I don't remember ever being seen as the one who was good with kids.
Definitely not. Yep.
Right. Thank you, Sophie. That's a lovely, a lovely kind of thing. But I'm I'm good at it. I became a deputy head of a primary school. Do you see what I mean? There's something there where, and I think people make this assumption that, you know, if you're good with children, do you see what I'm saying there? Like that it's a trait. It's not a profession. It's a personality thing. Like you're a teacher, you must like children. Do you get that at all, sort of from your friends, from colleagues?
I'm not sure. I think I am the person at a family party that will, you know, speak to the children and have a laugh with the children. But I don't think that's anything to do with me as a teacher. I think me as a teacher is, like I've said before, it's a little bit of acting. And when I walk into that classroom, I'm not the same person as I am when I'm, you know, playing with George and Tommy at yours. So I'm not sure, really.
Okay, we've got a caller coming in here. What I'm going to do is, Yusuf, oh, you've just disappeared there. I thought we had a call in. Let me just see if I can find you, Yusuf. There we go. I'm going to add you. Yusuf Mohammed, are you there? You might be joining us now. I have added you to the call there, Yusuf. It should allow you to talk if you wanted to start talking. We'll see if Yusuf joins. There may be a question. Remember, you can text in if you want to join the conversation, or of course you can call in if you want to ask either myself or my guest Sophie a question. We were just talking about I guess people making an assumption that teachers like children. Right? Not in a funny way, Sophie. I'm not trying to be
I just mean obviously to work in a school you've got to you know, like where you work and like the people that you work with. So it's a funny question, I think, really, because I can't say I hate children, but I'm a teacher. I think that's quite a...
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting, but you said as part of sort of your introduction that you got into teaching because of your love of the subject.
Yeah.
Right. And you're a secondary teacher now. So, you know, playing with, you know, as I say, we're like 6-year-olds at a party, you know, doing balloon animals and things. Yeah. That isn't necessarily within your job description, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So, whereas, okay. Khalil apparently did a show on that a while back, HB History, saying about whether people, you know, you have to love it. Now me, as a, are you a teacher of the children or a teacher of the subject? And this is where you and I probably differ the most as teachers, right, Zoe? I am a teacher. I've always been quite clear on that. Give me a subject, I'll teach it. And maybe that's what led me into primary. Right, you know, whereas you, it's the love of geography.
Well, and then primarily it was, I would say.
You have had to take on other subjects, I guess, as you've gone through.
I think, yes, I've taught RE, I've taught history, I've taught a little bit of French, I've taught maths. I think that's just the nature of being on SLT, though. Sometimes you just have to fill some of the gaps, unfortunately. I do love my subject. But my subject wouldn't be the same, and the way I teach wouldn't be the same if I didn't like the children that I teach.
Okay. So you've got friends who probably, you know, without giving away too much your age, you might have some friends who are getting into maybe having kids with teenagers?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay. So do they seek your advice on their teenagers, being that's your age range?
In terms of subject or in terms of just being...
I mean, like generally in terms of, yeah, so we kind of like take it away from the subject aspect, generally in terms of like, oh, Sophie's a teacher of secondary school kids. She must know what's going through the mind of a secondary school child.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And I think even within our family, as in our cousin's daughter went to secondary school in September after the lockdown, and it was her first year. And I think I was, you know, I was the person that was giving some advice on, you know, what to do for that. I've also done a lot of work on mental health. So I think a lot of my friends, you know, come to me if they've got an issue with anything to do with that. Or if there's a problem in a school and they need some advice on how to deal with, you know, if they've got a complaint or something and to do that. So yes, my friends do come to me about, you know, with questions and advice.
And some of that, I guess, is kind of what I would call crossing this boundary between, you know, as I say, my experience would be at a family barbecue. Nathan teaches primary, you know, give him some balloon animals to entertain the children. And I would feel sort of personally, you know, that isn't what I do. I am a teacher, but I am, you know, and I like working with children, but I am not, you know, I don't do it as a hobby necessarily. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that's a misconception, isn't it, of what you do as well, because... And it's unfair to think, oh, you know, we're at a party, Nathan, you're the primary school teacher, go and entertain.
Yeah, I guess, you know, switch it back on. But for me, I guess some of that takes back to something you said earlier, which was about, you know, a work persona and a private life persona.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because at work, and this probably won't surprise, you know, you as my sister, but one of the things that I enjoy about teaching is because I have a little element of showing off about me, right?
Yeah.
Just accept that. That's fine, Soph. Yeah, just drop me in it. But, you know, but that's how I got into it. You know, I was doing this kind of holiday camp, outdoor activity instructing. You know, I got into primary, so I played the guitar in class and the ukulele, and I do magic tricks and those things. That's part of my nature at work. It's not necessarily something that I do in my private life. And where I would take that to its kind of extreme is that I don't actually play the guitar or ukulele to my children that much or even at all, really. They were really surprised when I moved my guitar, you know, at the end of this term, I moved my guitar into the house because they'd not actually seen it, right?
Yeah. I think that's a bit on you and your kind of how you are not... It's not embarrassed or things like that. What when you're at school, you can put on this this act and you can be this person that you want to be. Whereas around your family, it's slightly different because they've known you since, you know, your whole life. And then when it's playing the guitar or something, I don't know, I'd find it a bit awkward. Not that anyone at a family barbecue is going to go, Sophie, can you explain to me how a meander's formed? And I'll go into, you know, a full-on description. And I think that's the unfair thing about being a primary school teacher as well, because you're more likely to get that. Oh, Nathan, can you entertain me? Or Nathan, can you do this? I'm not.
Okay, yeah, I get that. You know, maybe actually there's a primary secondary thing going on there, of maybe people, you know, make an assumption that actually primary school teachers are people who like kids, secondary school teachers are people who like subjects.
Yeah.
Right. Well, this kind of takes us on through that to talking about being a parent as a teacher and a teacher as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I will say again, and I hope you know, not in any embarrassing type way, but you don't have children at the moment, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Checked.
Yeah, just double checking. Something hasn't happened over summer that I wasn't aware of.
No.
So we're kind of facing it at different points, right? And you've seen me before and seen me now during as a parent of teachers. Now, one of the things that I often hear, and probably unfairly hear it directed towards younger female staff.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe this is a primary thing. I don't know if this happens at secondary as well, but certainly this kind of on the school gate of, you know, oh, well, you know, you'll understand when you have kids. Is that something that you've heard or come across?
Yeah, I mean, I get that too. You know, do you have children? Do you have to go, you know, do you know what it's like to have them at home and things like that? And obviously I don't, and I don't know what it's like. But then I also think I've been teaching for 15 years. Although I might not know what the children are like at home, children spend an awful lot of time at school. So I know how to deal with them, you know, at school, which is when I should be dealing with them anyway. So, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, that's clearly something that's sort of being said as if this kind of old wives' tale that somehow, you know, having children would in some way give you a broader, wider insight into, you know, understanding child development. As I say, you know, people for multiple reasons, and it is an unfairness, maybe won't have children. I think certainly it's something that there is a gender kind of divide on as well. Is I've heard it said to other people. I've never actually, I don't think, had it said directly to me as a male member of staff.
Right.
You know, like, oh, you'll understand more, you know, when you're a dad. I've heard it say to people like, oh, you'll understand more when you're a mum. I'm not sure, you know, maybe if you're listening, if that's something that you've heard, have you heard a gender difference? Remember, you can text in, call in to join the conversation as we kind of navigate through what I guess is quite a trickier aspect of this conversation. And, you know, there are assumptions people make about wanting children as well that can fall into this. And, you know, some people won't want children or for reasons will not have children. There is the other side of it as well that we talked about, you know, and if we're saying that actually being a parent doesn't make you a better teacher, I forget which, you know, one of the very famous, or at least on my PGCE, psychologists of education talked about, and he had studied his own children. That's where he developed a lot of his concepts from. Was it Piaget maybe? It's one of the kind of big names, and a lot of their research has been from kind of studying their own children and watching their own development. I can't say, apart from, you know, the ins and outs of my boys, I do not think having them has added to my understanding. A lot of the comments that came through on Twitter talked about better understanding social, societal pressures, you know, pressures in the household.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that would, you know, how, as someone who doesn't have children, do you think you understand what parents are going through?
That's a really tricky one, actually, because I don't know. Obviously, all of my knowledge is secondhand. So I know what, you know, some parents go through because my cousin's got teenagers, you've got, you know, younger boys, my friends have got children. But I wouldn't, in terms of the impact on my teaching, my teaching has nothing to do with whether I've got children or not. I feel like I am a okay, good teacher. And that wouldn't have, and having children or not wouldn't impact on that, I don't think. In terms of the pastoral side of things and how I support the students pastorally, maybe it would come into that because I don't have children myself, so I don't know what they're like at home and how to deal with that sort of thing. However, I feel that my experience of being a teacher and the roles that I've had, I've got a pretty good understanding of it.
Yeah. We've got Mrs. Strickey here, saying, evening, the assumption that irritated me most after having had one and only child was that I would go part-time after having her. If anything, being a teacher first helped me as a parent. Okay, so Mrs. Strickey there, obviously feel free to call in. Oh, Mrs. S. Tricky, sorry. That's me trying to read that all in one thing there. Hi there, if you wanted to call in, by all means, and kind of, you know, you can expand on that if you like. You know, I think that probably is another kind of thing as well, because I, as a parent, oh, here we go. Mrs. Tricky, you should be connected there. Welcome to Teachers Talk Radio. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
And you are coming through loud and clear as well.
Fabulous.
So do you want to expand on your sort of point there a little bit for us?
So I'm a long time head of department, currently a head of faculty, and I'm also the induction lead for initial teacher training and early career teachers at my school. My daughter's coming up to 5. She starts school in September. But when I had her, the deputy head, who happened to be male at the time, when I came back to say, right, here I am, I'm returning on this date, and this is what's going to happen. He's like, okay, is there an issue with this? He's like, well, I just assumed you'd go part-time. I was like, why? Because you're a mum. Well, yes, I am. But in my household, my husband it works part-time in the job that he does. And it meant that I didn't need to work part-time. And I have a head of department role. I find there are people that can do it part-time, but I'm a secondary teacher. It's quite difficult to do part-time. And I worked hard for where I'm at. It's not that I don't want to be at home with my child, but I also have a profession. And that's the thing that irritates me the most. I am almost a closet feminist on this point, in that it shouldn't just be down to mums to look after the children at home. But you often find the assumption, particularly in a school environment, with female teachers in particular, people don't go around asking the men, when are you going to have children? It's always the women. And then when you've had one, it's, oh, when are you having your second one? And so on and so forth. And I find it really quite frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, we were talking earlier, I'm from primary background, but I have had, you know, the two boys, and they were born at holiday breaks, you know, which was helpful, you know, being born at the start of Easter and the start of summer. But I don't actually ever remember anyone approaching me to ask me if I was even going to have paternity leave. I don't think it was, you know, sort of questioned, let alone if I want, you know, necessarily was going to stay off or go part time or anything. And I think you're right. You may that assumption that once you become a parent, that maybe, and I, you know, I want to word this carefully, but that maybe your job becomes a secondary thing.
For some people, it does. I mean, I'm always a parent first, but I'm also a teacher. I've been doing this for a long time. I genuinely love my job. I'm one of those irritating folk, one of the irritating members of our community, where I genuinely live to work. I genuinely love my job, and so I can do both. I manage both well, and our household works like that. For other people, it's different, and choices are very much personal. And I don't disrespect anybody for the decisions they made, or ones that they've perhaps had lesser choice over because of either finances or the jobs that their partners do, or perhaps they're single parents. And it's a delicate subject to broach, but yeah, it's always the women that get the questions.
Okay, well, I'm going to pop this one to you. This is a question that came, sort of, not a question, it was a statement, and I'm paraphrasing it,
yep.
That came from one of the Twitter feeds. And it's something that I actually kind of had to chew on for a little while and understand. And what it was, and it was a male member of staff who was saying this, and I don't know if that changes the context of it, but what they said was having children made you value your life outside of work more. Okay.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of sit on that for a second and think, and maybe I throw this back to Sophie, who's there. Sophie, do you feel that you don't value your life outside of work?
I, like Mrs. Tricky, love my job. I really enjoy being a teacher. I think as I've taught, the longer I've taught, the more I've thought about my work-life balance. So I don't think that is something I worry, you know, it's not something I think about as whether I don't value my life out of school. I feel like I've got to a good balance. I don't think that's got anything to do with children or anything. I think that's just the work that we do, the job that we're in.
I guess so. So but back to Mrs. Tricky. My question around this, I guess, is, you know, does it maybe feed into this false narrative then that people are looking at, that, you know, people before kids are kind of go-getting and all about career and, you know, dynamic people, this kind of thing. And then once we've had children, the likes of you and I are kind of, oh, you know, sat back a little.
No, I start my doctorate in October. So generally I haven't stepped back at all. I mean, what more could I want, you know, as if I haven't got, you know, scrapings of time as it is with a 5-year-old, a head of department job and a whole school training role, and then going back to university. For me, it's not. It's about managing your time. Now, I'm very much, before I would say that before I had my daughter, I would quite often bring work home. I'd do planning. I'd do messing about with lesson plans, not because I had to, but because I was genuinely interested and I wanted to. But now that balance has shifted. So I leave work at work, and that means I will stay a little bit later in school than I did pre-child to make sure my work is done. And then when I get home, because I only see her in the weekday for a couple of hours before, by the time I've got home from work, picked her up from childcare, and then it's her bedtime, that time is precious and that time is hers. So that's all about her. My work stays out of that, and I don't bring work home. There are obviously various different pressure points in the year as a secondary teacher, and this one has been phenomenally challenging where you would have to bring work home, but still that's not done when she's around, because my time is for her. And there's nothing that breaks your heart more than your child going, "Mummy, are you playing with me today, or have you got to do work?" There's nothing that rips you to pieces more than that. So for me, it's just about finding the balance. In relation to your other point about you're a better teacher when you're a parent, I'm not sure I agree with that either. I before I had my child, was obsessed with Jo Frost and Super Nanny. And the things I've learned from Super Nanny are what I employ in my teaching. Super Nanny should train teachers on behaviour management because it's phenomenal. And then that then feeds into actually being a parent. So I think arguably the skills I have as a teacher enable me to parent almost.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's something that I guess maybe get onto. I am terribly bad at, you know, and I will say this, you know, I have always specialised since training. I worked in a pupil referral unit as a teaching assistant. I was, you know, known when I was working around that about going into tough and challenging schools and dealing with tricky behaviour, and that's what I did. And now I have two tricky boys. As I say, you know, I have a Tommy who is a Tommy. And, you know, I had this week at nursery kind of that thing on the gate of kind of, oh, he's been a little boisterous today. And I'm kind of, as a teacher, going, yeah, no, I know what that means. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to word around it. But I have an understanding of it. But putting it into action, I think I actually struggle with. You know, I'm not necessarily sure that I, you know, I have all of, you know, I have the books on my shelf about everything, you know, like a bit like you're saying about Super Nanny. I have a whole shelf full of behavior management strategies, you know, working for a master's towards this kind of work. And yet I've got two children in front of me who, you know, I struggle to kind of put it into practice. I don't know, as much as I know it, and I should know it, my children certainly aren't the angels that you would expect of, or maybe people in the wider school, you know, on the gate, they would be going, oh, yeah, no, Mr. Ginn, he's always, you know, good with the naughty children. I bet his kids are immaculately behaved. They're certainly not.
And my daughter starts school in September, and I can already predict the conversations that I'll be having with the teacher on the gate, because I have birthed a clone, and I know what I was like as a child at school. And so try as hard as I might, I can't get away from actually dealing with my own self, it seems. So yeah, easy, it's not. But there are techniques that I use interchangeably between home and school, I would say.
Okay, now we are going to have to go to the news in a second, but thank you so much for calling in. But I have one last question before you go, when we go to the news. So we're going to be talking about, after this, teaching your own children, as in the child, you know, your child attending your school. Would that be something that you would allow to happen? Would you try and avoid, you know, in, what are we talking, 7 years' time now? How would you feel if the new year 7 class had your daughter in it?
Oh, split, I think, on that one. Very much split, in that, when I was at school, my best friend was the daughter of a teacher at the school, and she did not have a great time at school.
Okay.
Because her mum was a teacher there. And I would like to, almost like the separation of mum versus Mrs. Tricky. I would be more than happy for her to attend the school that I'm at. So I'm proud of the school that I work at. And, you know, it's a good school. We've got great teachers and a great community. However, I would, for her well-being, rather than my own well-being, really, and less worry, is that I would have probably a different school.
Yeah. Now, we are going to be talking about a little bit more about that with Sophie on the other side. Thank you so much for calling in. It's been lovely to hear your thoughts and for joining the conversation. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to mute you, and it's called eject you from the call. It's
no
such
problem.
A horrible way of phrasing it, but I am just going to pop you off there. And we are going to head to the news.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn. The government in England is facing mounting pressure to implement safety measures in schools ahead of reopening in September. In America, where schools have now opened, the Delta variant is surging. Dr. Mark Klein, a paediatric infectious disease specialist, has spoken this week of the myth that children are somehow immune to COVID, saying it has become very clear that children are heavily impacted. SafeHead for All Group has sent an open letter to Education Secretary Gavin Williamson and the Department for Education, saying it wants mask wearing recommended for all age groups, class sizes reduced to help with social distancing and ventilation, and it wants CO2 monitors and air filters installed. Teaching unions have also been asking for similar measures since last year. They have previously shared fears that a do-nothing approach to build herd immunity will put too many youngsters at risk and increase the chance of the virus mutating into a variant that will eventually evade the vaccine. In Scotland, Fife Council, with funding from the Scottish Government, is discussing a new super campus on the former Hyundai factory site beside the M90. Fife Council education boss Carrie Lindsay will present a report stating that incorporating two schools into a shared campus with Fife College will expand the types of learning on offer, especially to older pupils. She states that the ambition is to develop and deliver one coherent offer to young people, which highlights the learning packages available to them across school and college, and the routes for progression. The school will provide increased opportunities to create an inclusive learning community where pupils can be involved in learning across all curricular areas, particularly in the senior phase. The Super Campus aims to include a new Woodmill and St Columbus School at the Dunfermline Learning Campus. This has been your daily education news briefing.
And bore da pawb, croeso I Abertawe. Hello everyone, welcome to Swansea. Our incidental Welsh for today, mae hi'n chwilog. It is sunny. It is beautiful weather here in South Wales. We have the beaches and there have been people, hi Justina, they're messaging in. There have been people out on the beaches and, you know, on Twitter I've seen many people travelling from all over the country to visit these beaches. Best to describe, when people hear about Swansea, they think of a city. Actually, you know, we have some of the most beautiful coastline in the country, well, in not just this country, but in the UK as well. Around sandy beaches, beautiful coves, and we are talking about family and teachers. Now, at the start of the show, we talked about what it's like being the child of a teacher, and we've got my sister here as well, Sophie Ginn. Hi, Sophie.
Hi.
Hi. And we talked about what it's like being the child of teachers. Both of our parents were teachers, and a few of our other hosts have messaged in saying that actually they are. Both of their parents were teachers as well. And we talked a little bit about what that meant for holidays, a little bit about, you know, whether they tried to put us off, which, you know, for us, we both said that they didn't. Maybe, you know, if you're listening and you have experience of a family member who is a teacher, maybe they tried to put you off, or maybe they encouraged you. It'd be really interesting to hear some different points of view. We also then talked with Mrs. Tricky, who called in, a lovely one of our listeners, to talk about what it's like having children and some of those assumptions that people make about whether we want children, whether it means putting your career second, whether in fact it makes you a better teacher. And I think the general consensus from Twitter and from our callers has been that actually being a parent doesn't change your pedagogy, I guess would be the best word of saying it, at all. There have been some questions about whether it maybe changes your priorities. For me, I don't think it has. Mrs. Tricky said that it hadn't changed for hers as well when she called in. And some people have also said that maybe it changes your pastoral point of view. And that's something I wanted to pick up on, Sophie, with you, because, you know, you as a head of year, you have a pastoral element to your role.
Yep.
And so that means, I guess, you know, dealing with attendance issues, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yep.
You know, maybe someone secondary who's struggling motivating their teenager.
Yep. I mean, I think I'm not sure whether being a parent gives you some knowledge of helping students to get into school. But I think also being a teacher, I'm trained to do some of that stuff. You know, I've been on courses about attendance. I've been on safeguarding courses. My knowledge of getting students into school and supporting them in school is probably greater than that of some parents.
Yeah, you know, and that is one of the things that I maybe, you know, I wanted to think about. I always use this kind of, you know, this saying, I guess it's kind of a part of a saying when I talk about teaching, is that you can have, you know, when people say they have 10 years experience, you can have the same year 10 times, mm-hmm. you know, where you don't change anything about what you do and you just plod on with the same thing 10 times, or you can have 10 different years of experience that build progressively to, you know, allowing you to grow and become better. And I think I see parenting in the same way. The difference between you and I is that I have a couple of children in my house. And whilst that does, you know, as you've seen, cause me issues with, you know, tidiness and toys and tantrums, it only gives me one or maybe two people to practice on. Whereas when I go into school, I've got 30 as a primary school teacher. And I've got a new 30 every year. And so my experience.
Yeah, and the issues you have at home might not be the same issues that, you know, you'd have at school with some of the students.
Yeah, you know, as a parent, I might become an expert in dealing with my child.
Yeah.
But that's one very specific version of it, I guess.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay, well, you know, as I say, thank you. And, you know, I know it is a tricky conversation sometimes, you know, when we get into those bits and pieces. But as I say, the overwhelming support of people on Twitter were sort of saying that actually, you know, this is a myth that needs combating. And people might say it on the school gate, but actually it's kind of, I don't know if it's one of those defensive things that comes out when people are maybe being challenged about their own children. Yeah. I don't know, possibly. Right, we are moving on to kind of, I guess, the final sort of section that I wanted to talk to you about, and that is working with the family, right?
Yeah.
So we've got some different perspectives, you know, and obviously there will be colleagues who we know of who have been in classes and worked with children within their family. Now, you taught at the same school as our father,
yes,
right? Now, I didn't necessarily do any teaching work with mum, but I certainly went and helped out with some of the things. As you say, we talked about, you know, me helping out on ski trips. I definitely went down to Crystal Palace a couple of times to help out with sporting events down there. And certainly, you know, going in to help out on sports days and things as a adult helper, for want of a better word. You know, I had been around.
I'm not sure you'd be able to do that now, but yeah.
No, I don't.
Before all of the...
sort of some of the checks.
The safeguarding, yeah.
Sarah, I don't want to get it wrong, but I'm hoping that's Mrs. S. Tricky, who we sort of heard from earlier, actually took my dad on my first ever abroad trip as an adult helper. And do you know what? Actually, we have certainly had our staff sometimes roping their parents, roping parents to help out as adult helpers. Yeah. I guess, yeah, maybe it might be different now with people who are under 18. I don't know. Okay, no one contact mum's school.
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. I'm not sure we'd get away with that now.
But so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But also, I attended school for a little while that dad taught at.
Yes.
I do not remember it at all. Did you attend that school as well? Were you old enough to attend?
No, I didn't. I'm not sure quite why that you and Marcus got to go to a different school than I did. No, I didn't go to that one.
The only thing I remember from having my dad as a teacher, and maybe this is primary schools are different, is that I fell over in the playground and cut my chin open.
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
And he was the first aider on duty and got called out. You know, there's a child who's really hurt themselves and had to come out, and it was his own child who had actually been hurt. And, yeah, I had to go and have stitches and now a big scar on my chin. that is honestly the only thing I remember really about having a dad who worked at the school. Yeah. I do currently, or just this year, had a teaching assistant who had their child in their year two class.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And I remember talking to her about it, and she had an older child as well. And, you know, before we obviously knew that the children were moving through the school, so we knew that for staffing. But I remember talking to her and sort of saying, you know, how do you feel about that? This is ideally where we'd like you to be, you know, for multiple reasons, but, you know, you have a child in that class. And she said, actually, for that child, she felt it was fine. Had it been her other child, maybe, then she'd have said no way. And yeah, so it was down to kind of interpersonal. So have you had any experience, first of all, of people teaching their own children or children attending the school as pupils?
So where I work and I live, a lot of teachers and support staff live in the area. It's, you know, it's a nice place to live, and we send their children to our school. We try as best we can not to put people in the same classes, so, you know, or in the same house, just to make it easier and to do the separation from the teacher being a teacher and the teacher being a parent and the child. But I think, you know, sometimes if you see your own child walking down the corridor, you know, or getting told off, it's that embarrassment, isn't it? I think that's the fear for most people, that you just don't want to. You don't want your child to be the one that's in trouble with your colleagues or your friends that you work with. And I think that is the issue. Whereas at our school, we try as best we can not to match that, unless, you know, for some reason, you know, the science teacher teaching top set science and the student is a top set scientist, then they, you know, get put in the same group. But we try not to do that. But we've got quite a few actually at school with parents that work at our school.
Do they ever have, or has it ever, you know, arisen, should I say, or could it, you know, you can answer it as broadly as you want without kind of obviously giving away any specific details, but where, you know, I can imagine that, you know, if a child is sent to detention by another child's parent, there might be some kind of umbrage there.
I was in as if two teachers were parents.
No, if so, you know, so if
say if I had a, I sent someone to detention, but their parent was also a colleague of mine.
Oh, well, that'd be a good one, actually. Oh, okay. You know, teacher colleagues. Because, no, I was thinking the other way around, that, you know, like my mate's dad, who's the maths teacher, sends me to detention. You know, do I, or worse, if it's not my dad, not if it's not my mate.
Not that I've noticed, not that I've witnessed at our school, but that would be my, I think that would be my fear, that because I'd put someone in detention, that they'd take it out on my kid. Not, you know, yeah. I think that's the fear. Not that, you know, that might never happen. I've never known it happen at my school, but that is always the fear. And I think that's why I feel that we were quite lucky that mum and dad both taught about half an hour away. And although it was in the same county and, you know, the teachers knew each other because P, you know, P staff tend to know each other quite a lot, we actually didn't have any of that.
Okay, well, I guess that then takes me onto the other side. I certainly have taught children of staff members at the school.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember actually a very nice conversation at a previous school where I said to a member of staff whose son was joining my class that year, I said, well, you know, if you think this is going to be awkward, you can talk to the head teacher. And we were 2 form entry primary. So you can talk to the head teacher and we'll put him in the other class. And she said, no, I've actually already spoken to the head teacher and I asked for him to be in your class, okay. Which was really nice as a professional kind of, you know,
yeah.
Kudos thing. But then, yeah, I was doing parents' evenings with people who were members of staff, right?
Yeah.
So you say you've had children through.
Yeah, so I've done that before and also had to make phone calls home for whatever reason, you know, good phone calls, bad phone calls, you know, medical phone calls. But I've always done it, even though the member of staff might be at my school. We're always told to do it. You know, you need to phone. You don't go and see them. You've got to phone. You know, you've got to do it properly, as if you would, as if the parent wasn't a teacher at your school.
Yeah, and we've got Sarah here. Messaging saying, my experience in secondary, the difficulty comes. I think you're saying the same there. When it comes to deal with an issue, speaking to the colleague as a parent rather than as a colleague can be a challenge. Yeah. And I've certainly noticed that when I've, you know, come into those situations at different schools that I've worked in, and there has been a little bit of tension, and I have seen it go wrong the other way, I guess you would call it, where someone's an inexperienced member of staff has maybe tried to approach that parent in the staff room, for instance.
Yeah, and that's where I think
it's got a little bit tricky, certainly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think you have to treat them as a parent, not as a colleague. So you have to go through the same measures that you would go through, you know, as if you were just talking to someone that you didn't know, you know, that was just a parent. And I think that goes with behaviour as well. I think, you know, if someone's been a little bit naughty in your lesson, you wouldn't then go and phone the parent straight away or tell the parent straight away and go, oh, you know, they've been really, you know, they've been a little bit silly in my lesson, they were calling out. If you wouldn't normally tell a parent that, you don't go and tell your colleague that either.
No, yeah, I think, you know, there is, yeah, you kind of got to have draw this kind of that switch between the professional and the personal, and I guess those roles again. One of the things I was going to ask Sophie and also our listeners, if you are listening in, have you ever taught someone who, as a child, who then had a parent who outranked you, for want of a better word, or was possibly a teacher, but at another school? So possibly you taught the, you know, the head teacher's child from a different school locally.
I'm trying to think. No, not from another school. I don't think so. Not that I've. Well, yes, but not. Yeah, a tricky one. Yes, I have. but not a direct comparison, you know, not a secondary school teacher, I suppose.
Okay.
It makes a difference, but yeah.
You're belittling us primary school teachers.
No, not primary. I was going to say, no, post 16.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't belittling. I wouldn't do that.
Shocking, again, that you kind of put down my choice of career.
No, I wouldn't do that because I was a middle school teacher. So, you know, I was in the middle. Provider. But it's never caused any issues.
No, you know, I just wonder because that, again, must be a bit of a shocker sometimes. You say, oh, what, you know, the children come, oh, what does your dad do? Oh, he's a head teacher. What does your mum do? Oh, she's a lecturer in on an ITT course.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that must be quite difficult for teachers. Okay, Sophie, what we are going to do is we're going to our last ad break. When we come back, I want to hear just a little bit from you about what it's like working with a family member. Okay, so teaching at the same school as your dad. So off we go to our last ad break. Here we go.
Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
And Croeso I Abertawe, welcome to Swansea. Bore da pawb. We are moving on, I should say, really prunhan dda, or maybe even nos da, depending on where you are in the world, because it is, the sunlight is fading slightly here in Swansea, and we are talking about family and teaching all the way through here on Teachers Talk Radio. If you've missed the start of it, you can go and listen back at ttradio.org. And you can find any of our shows from any of our hosts there. But if you wanted to catch up on the start of our show here, we were talking about being from a family of teachers and what that was like being taught, growing up with parents as teachers. We talked a little bit alike about what it's like having your own children or choosing not to have your own children as a teacher and the assumptions people make about that. And then we've talked just a little bit about working with colleagues and children who attend the same school as you. Now, as I say, my sister Sophie is here on the line with us. Sophie, hello.
Hello, I'm still here.
Still here. Now, the last little bit that I wanted to kind of find out from you and just your impressions on before we leave for the evening is teaching alongside a family member. Now, I am aware of some secondary schools where they've been like brothers and sisters, you know, who teach alongside each other. But you teach or did teach at the same school as our dad.
I did.
What was that like?
Well, when I started, so my NQT year, I started at a middle school and dad was there, but he was teaching part time. So he was teaching just, I think, Mondays and Tuesdays. And the way the school was set up, I actually didn't see dad in school at all. And at the time, I was still living at home. So I did used to get a lift in with dad and a lift home. But I didn't see dad in school that much at all, really. And whilst I was there, I think for the 5 years I was there, dad was still there as a part-time technology teacher. He was there, not PE. And I think the only children knew we were related. They knew we were father and daughter. They never used to say anything to either of us, I don't think. Dad was put out when I first started there because you were known by the first letter and last letter of your second name. So it was GN. Well, because I was a full-time teacher and he was part-time, that became my teacher code, and he had to have another one. And then I think the only thing that I remember students ever saying about dad was, you know, hasn't he got a really loud sneeze? Or that was it, really. Dad's a great teacher. Dad's technology teaching was fantastic, and students loved him. So it wasn't You know, it was never an issue. No one ever came to moan. I became head of year there as well. No one ever came to moan to me about him or say anything derogatory. It was a nice experience, you know, to teach that.
Yeah, and so I mean, I guess one of the questions I would have about it is, you know, the paternalization, you know, of, you know, if people saw you as not younger, but maybe less senior, you know, but you actually got career progression at this school.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone ever saw that as an issue. I don't think Dad would let that, you know, Dad wouldn't let that be an issue either. You know, Dad's quite chilled out man, isn't he? And you know, never was an issue whatsoever.
Okay, so my final question for you then. Okay, you've talked with our dad.
Yeah.
Okay. What if I joined your school?
I think it would be fine. I, you know, not an issue. I think you know, it depends how you came into the school, I suppose, because I'm assistant head at the moment, and that sibling rivalry, if you came in as deputy head, then I'm not sure I'd be very happy about it. Well, I don't know. How would you deal?
You'd prefer to line manage me, is what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't. No, I don't think that either. I'd prefer...
Not to have anything to do with you.
Yeah, not have to line manage you. I don't know, but you know, as you know, I teach with someone that was our next door neighbour.
Till I
was 21, he was our next door neighbour, and I actually line manage him, and there is no issues there because you know we're both professional. And I guess if you joined my school, then you know we would keep the, you know, it's all about being professional. When you're in school, you're in school, and you know, whatever conversations or sibling banter you have outside of school, you keep that to outside of school.
Listen, Sophie, thank you so much for coming on. No, the biggest takeaway from this discussion for me is, you know, this kind of way that we found, I guess, throughout a lot of this, that there is, you know, who we are as teachers and who we are as people. And maybe, you know, there is separation there. And I think that maybe that is the healthy way to do this. And anyone who's saying that, you know, being a parent will change you as a teacher, maybe it's because they don't understand that, you know, privately we're not who we are when we're in front of a class.
Yeah.
And that separation is there.
I'm not saying we're completely different. You know, I'm not completely different. I'm not fake in front of my classes or when I'm at school. I just know what to, you know, to keep it professional when I do put a little bit of acting on.
All right, well, listen, Sophie, thank you so much. And to all our listeners, remember, you know, if you want to catch up on any of our shows, you can visit ttradio.org/listenback, where you can catch up with this show or any of our hosts and listen back as you go. Now I'm going to play the closeout music. Nostar, Sophie.
Okay, see ya.
It means good night in Welsh. Thank you. I know you don't speak Welsh. That's no, why I'm throwing it in there.
Don't.
Nostar, Sophie. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.
And Nostar, everyone. Good night.